Ever feel like your WordPress site is moving in slow motion? Switch to Kinsta's Managed Hosting for WordPress and watch it fly. Host your site on Google Cloud's fastest servers with worldwide data centers so your pages load instantly. Need help? WordPress experts respond in under 2 minutes and will migrate to your site for free. Try it yourself. First month free at Kinsta.com. That's Kinsta.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting. Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding Ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple places on the internet. We're live on YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, of course. Give me that job.
Come on.
Twitch, Instagram, Kick. We're back on Kick this week. Back on Kick. Very exciting.
Maybe what an exciting thing that we say a lot about, and I think one person ever has watched us on what may be an imaginary crypto NFT site or something.
Yes. It's a great, I'm just glad we're broadcasting there. And of course, maybe you're listening to the podcast later, wherever you get your podcasts. And just a note, you can get this podcast and all of our podcasts ad-free at patreon.com/comicbookclub. We have many great supporters there. We hang out on Discord all day. We chat about comics and movies and TV. We got a sneak preview of a pretty sweet CGC graded Doom that I believe was signed by Jonathan Hickman. That was pretty cool.
Very cool.
Only in the Comic Book Club Discord, baby.
That's right. It's a hotspot. Speaking of that, we have Stray Bullet in the comments here. Oh, man, none of you dressed up. That is true. A lot of talk about that. Yeah. Here's the thing. I don't look dressed up, but I'm surrounded by the city of St. Louis. So my costume is St. Louis right now.
Just because you travel doesn't mean you can use that as an excuse, bro.
That's an excuse. There's
But you should also say that you're slathered in barbecue sauce from the waist down.
Exactly. Exactly.
Also, we know you travel with wigs. You're a classically trained actor.
I'm a classic clown. I'm ready to be a goof. I'm ready for an instant goof.
Yes, right. Stray Bullet did request that we dress up for Halloween this week. We did not do that. I'm very sorry about that. But I'm sure we could talk more about Halloween later in the show, or more specifically, maybe even right now with our first group of guests, if that's all right with you guys.
Yeah,
let's say yes.
They got a very seasonably appropriate book called Dracula Book 3, The Count, ladies and gentlemen, Matt Wagner and Kelly Jones. Woo-hoo! Welcome back to the show.
Yeah.
Welcome, welcome.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having us.
Oh, my gosh. Very excited to have you guys here and very excited to talk about this book. Now, before we start, I do want to bring up every week on the show, we have Stray Bullet, a professional chef down in New Orleans. He has a restaurant called Shift, and he designs, either creates or curates a cocktail for us. And this week, he did a cocktail based on your book, which is called The Count's Descent. And it sounds delicious. It's rye whiskey, cherry liqueur, sweet vermouth, absinthe, Agnusura bitters, and a blood orange rind. Matt, did you say your wife was making
one? No, it was Kel.
Kelly.
She wants to make that tonight.
Oh, okay.
Fantastic.
Okay. Does she have all those ingredients on hand? Holy shit.
I think the only thing she needed might be the blood orange.
I was going to say, blood orange rind might be a long shot to just have hanging around.
That's the only thing, but I think the absinthe would be. Yeah.
Well,
that's
basically a
redder, bloodier old fashioned. Which is all right in my book, let me tell you.
All right.
Well, there you go.
So that's human blood.
The Count's Descent, which sounds pretty decent, if you ask me. But boy. Moving really on from that terrible joke to talk about Dracula Book 3, The Count. So this is on Kickstarter now. We've got, I'm taking a look here, 52 hours to go as of this Woo-hoo. Taping. And on a very glib $666 goal, you currently have pledged $207,861.
Wow.
So, you know, I haven't checked it today. That really?
Yeah.
What, did it go up by like $100,000 today?
No. But, you know, I mean, with these Kickstarter things, they tend to, you know, they tend to burst out of the gate and you get,
yeah,
I don't know, 80% of it right up front, you know, and then the rest of the month you're sitting there watching it tick, 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 tick up a little bit. But it's in the last 48 hours or so, you get another big burst. So we're really
well, nice. I would be watching more, but I'm under the gun by a certain writer to get a lot of stuff.
Ooh.
I don't have time to be on the internet.
Unnamed writer.
Yeah,
you're being kickstarted as well, yeah. Kelly.
Well, this is a good segue to bring up talking about the book, because this has been a long journey for you guys of a couple of years. I believe we had you on to talk about book two as well. Yeah. But this is a reimagining and retelling of the history of Dracula. And this book, please correct me if I'm wrong here, but this is getting to the part that I think most people probably know best, the novel, but taking it from the direction of Dracula himself, something we don't get in the book. First of all, do I have that right so far?
You do. Okay. And I keep saying that in many ways, this was the one we've been shooting for from the beginning.
Right. Cool.
Because this one takes place in conjunction with the novel itself. Anybody that's a fan of the novel will know that once the action shifts from the castle in Transylvania to the streets of Victorian London, Dracula's pretty much off stage for the rest of the book. He's more of a shadowy, sinister presence than an actual on-set villain. And that works in a very Victorian Gothic narrative sense. But, you know, it's been 120-plus years since the novel came out. As monster fans, we want to see more of Dracula. Like, what the hell's he doing the whole time he's married? So this is it. We show you everything he's doing.
Cool.
A lot of interesting stuff, because he is basically in an alien environment, right? He's suddenly transported to one of the most, one of the largest, most contemporary metropolises around the earth at that point. And he had spent the last 400 years of his life in this isolated castle, in this very rustic setting in the Carpathian Mountains. So that's a big shift. And so he has to figure out how to make that work. So we see him exploring London, figuring out how he's going to try and exploit it. He's smart. He's not there for just an immediate blood orgy. He is a tactician from his years as being a military warlord, and then from 400 years of being a vampire. Vampires have to be very careful about their existence.
Oh, yeah.
So we see him negotiating this world very, very carefully.
Now, what's it like being behind the wheel of a character like Dracula in this environment? Like, what are the details that you sort of discovered along the way from someone that's usually
again,
so pulled back?
There's a lot of practicality. Like, for instance, everybody probably knows the name Carfax, right? Which is usually called Carfax Abbey. That's a misnomer. It's not an abbey in the book. It's conflated with Whitby Abbey, which is in another setting in the book earlier. That's where the ship, the Demeter, if anybody's familiar with the recent film, The Last Voyage of the Demeter, that's where the Demeter crashes. Carfax is an old estate in London, on the outskirts of London. It has a cathedral, a chapel and a cemetery on the grounds, but it is not an abandoned abbey. It's an estate. But it's located in an area called Purfleet, which is 18 miles to the east of central London. So, practically, how does he get back and forth? I had to figure out that, you know? Additionally, everybody knows the trope of the fact that Dracula needs to be invited into a dwelling to enter. London literally has millions of thresholds that he is entering without an invitation, you know? Additionally, there's the reality of money. All of a sudden, you know, he's not just this aristocratic can do whatever I want warlord. He has to operate via commerce. And he makes several comments in book three that to the West, the true god of the West is commerce, you know?
I'm curious from both of you, but Kelly, I want to ask you first, since you have more of this ramp to get to the sort of tried and true story of the Dracula novel, what did you learn along the way? How did you, were there things, say, in the first book that you feel like you perfected artistically in terms of Dracula or the world or the look of it by the third book, or were you hitting the ground running by the
hit the ground running because I was not looking at anything as an influence other than that script.
No, so, that's great.
So I didn't look at anything. I wasn't interested in anything.
Though we know all the other stuff.
Yeah, and I do. That is true. You know it inside out and backwards. But I didn't want anyone having to go through the same ground twice. I didn't want them seeing the same stuff. I didn't want them doing... Matt was doing that. Was doing a completely original take on what Stoker was doing. Nothing new, but showing you stuff you didn't see. Going further into areas that Stoker had just touched on. So I felt I had to follow that lead. And it was far more exciting and far more interesting of a draw than, you know, just doing Easter eggs of stuff everybody knew or doing takes that everybody had seen. If somebody's going to come to our book and it's a crowdfunded, they deserve something utterly brand new country, brand new everything, but completely familiar territory, if that makes sense.
And a big part of this entire project has been striking various balances, you know, how to stick exactly close to the canon that Stoker laid down, but as Kelly said, presenting something new. So in regards to that, from Kelly's point of view or Kelly's end of things, you know, the difference between book one and book three is that he's still the same character. And yet in some ways he's a completely different character once he makes it to London, you know? And so Kelly kind of brings an entirely new energy to his presentation. You know, again, he's not the warlord who has grown up with a certain regality in regards to his environment and the people that surround him. Now he's a stranger in a strange land, you know?
Yeah. So then, Matt, for you, then what is some of that new territory using the classic text as a base that you feel like this new volume you sprung into?
Well, one of the things, well, first of all, the book is full of a bunch of, and this too is very Victorian, it's full of a bunch of bullshit coincidences.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Jonathan Harker travels all the way to London or to Transylvania to facilitate the sale of this property in London. And then when Dracula comes to England, which is a big, very populous country, the first person he meets is the best friend of the fiance of the guy that came to Transylvania to sell him the property.
There were fewer people back then. Everyone was always bumping into each other.
Similarly, the property he buys is across the street from a sanitarium that's owned and run by a doctor who's in love with the woman that's the best friend of the fiance of Jonathan Harker. So a lot of these Victorian coincidences, you know. But one thing about my approach was, you know, the novel is told in what's known as epistolary style, meaning it's there's no omniscient narrator. It's all told in the form of letters and private journals and news articles and such. And the characters, the narrators, really feel his presence. They feel that he's stalking them, that he's spying on them, that he... I don't take that approach at all. It's like, he doesn't give a shit about them. You know, he's off doing his own thing. And the fact that they're around and these coincidences are just, as I said, coincidental. You know, additionally, you know, opposite from so many of the film versions, specifically the Coppola version, you were, Justin, you were mentioning Coppola there earlier. You bought
right here. I got him. This is blood.
There's nothing romantic about Dracula in the book. He has no tender feelings towards these two women. He preys on Lucy because she's the first person he encounters. He preys on Mina later to weaponize her against his enemies. So there's nothing romantic about it. So he's not really concerning himself with these Stoker's band of heroes. You know, much to his chagrin later, he ignored them a little too long. You know, But yeah, we see him doing all sorts of things that are interesting and we've never seen before. And, you know, again, all of a sudden Kelly's having to draw just this completely different world, not these dank forests and these crumbling castles. All of a sudden we're right in the middle of one of the biggest cities on Earth, the center of what at the time was known the empire on which the sun never sets, because Britain had so many colonies all around the world that as the Earth turned and the sun hit every area of the Earth, there was a British colony everywhere, you know. So it's a whole new world for Kel to draw, and oh my God, he does it so well.
It's a lot of fun.
Talk about like the curving buildings and everything that you have. Is that harder and more time consuming?
No. Honestly, because it is such an original thing. There's a lot of energy for me to do it. I know I'm doing something new with something that's 130 years old, and I know that it's in canon, so it isn't like you're just going off into some wild world. And there is something when you know you're doing a story that has an arc in it, you want to maintain that arc in a natural way, so that when people look at the first one, by the time they get the third one, we're not doing the same thing again. You know, it's something that brings that Matt writing the third one the way he did brings a new atmosphere to it. I don't have to try to do the same thing over again. It's brand new. His dress is different. I love him wearing a top hat.
Yeah, we have wearing a top hat a lot, which of course, you know, gives these echoes of Lon Chaney's famous lost film, silent film, London After Midnight, you know.
And I love him dressing up to go out in for the evening. you know, I love that he does all these very urbane, civilized things while tearing the clothes off some woman and draining her blood. Mm-hmm. you know, and that's where I echo back to what he was in the first two. Is when he's doing that stuff, you go, he's not different. None of this has changed him. He's going to change them.
His pinky's not up a little higher in London. No. No, when he's sucking that blood.
No, his fangs are a little longer, but he's such an interesting character that you have to be careful that you don't root for him. And then Matt will pull a stunt where you go, nope, not going to root for him. It's an unapologetic character,
because don't we all love those kind of characters? From my own corner of the world, you know, Grendel is that.
Yeah, of course.
And you know, of course, Hannibal Lecter is that, and Tony Soprano's that, and Walter White is that. I mean, there's just this parade of these charming monsters, you know, and it's just a blast being able to.
We don't have to kowtow to a publisher. It's Matt wants to write, whatever I want to draw, and so people see a completely unfettered, unbiased comic book story.
Well, I feel like when we talked to you guys during Volume 2, it was like, we're going to make this as fucked up as we want it to be.
It is.
Yeah.
And so how is it? This is your third time around with the crowdsource. Like, what
it's
is it?
It's more fucked up. It is.
Yeah.
Matt.
And we keep telling people book 4 is the most evil one of all.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you have to. Matt can spin a lot of plates.
And they're all fucked up. All the plates are.
And just when you think, okay, and I'm sitting there thinking, well, what is he going to do? And I get the script and I said, oh, Jesus. but I think it's completely natural to the character. Nothing's done just to do it. It completely builds on this guy's personality. And all through it, I have to remind myself, I don't get to fall back on, oh, he's a vampire. No, this is how he would. This is
right. He was. Yeah. In book one, he doesn't turn into a vampire at the end. So we had to make sure he was already this character.
Yeah.
You know, he was already ruthless. He was already bloodthirsty, even though he wasn't actively drinking blood.
I mean,
you know?
The guy was putting spikes up people's rear ends. Yep. You know, before anything to do with being a vampire and enjoying it.
Speaking of vampires, yeah. Almost tame in comparison.
Yeah, I mean, it honestly is.
I would rather be killed by a vampire than by Vlad as a human.
Yeah.
Much sexier the way you're doing it now.
I feel like I know the answer to this based on the way that you're talking about it, but so you have the cadence of you've been doing the Kickstarters, like we're talking about, you're on book three. They're also released through Dark Horse later on, but given this freedom that you have here, do you feel like this is the system that you want going forward? Do you feel like, I'll do some stuff for traditional publishers again in the future, or do you want to keep the Kickstarter?
I don't know. When you've been free, it's hard to go back to.
Yeah.
You know, I've been on this now for how, I don't know, this is my third book. I'm almost done. And I've known freedom before, but this is as free as I've ever been. I don't think twice about what I'm doing. Mm. And
Kelly's wife says she's never seen him happier.
You're right. And so I'll have publishers come to me, and as soon as they start talking, I can feel no interest because I can't bring anything to it. Because as soon as I bring the stuff that will make it work, they'll say no. And with Matt, it's like, well, you can show more. You don't care about it, you know? And so once I am at that point, I think the success of this thing is absolutely due to the fact that Matt and I are unchained on this.
In a way, you become intoxicated by drinking the blood of this project.
Absolutely, baby.
I think, actually, the project's intoxicated by the fact that I can do what I want.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, as a follow-up here, and this is a little bit leading, but you both have been associated with DC's Vertigo imprint, right. And that is back now. They're certainly framing that up as like a creator-owned thing that they're looking for teams who have worked together before at a reliable. You're a team that's worked together right now at is reliable.
I don't know if I could take the pay cut.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah, and not only that, like, why would we want to go, you know, because you do got to suck the corporate teat in some fashion every time you work with the big cup publishers. Having had pretty good experiences working with DC.
Oh, yeah, I have nothing bad to say about it.
But it's nothing like this, where it's just like, we only answer to ourselves. You know?
The people I used to deal with when I got started at DC were completely in charge. So if I said something to Danny O'Neill or Archie Goodwin, Karen Berger, they were the final. That was it. They were the only person.
Yeah, that's not the case anymore. Yeah.
That isn't the case anymore. You have a lot of cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And the people I dealt with made comics before they edited comics. So they knew what they were asking, and they knew what you were doing, and they could, and they had their own taste.
And they knew to leave you alone.
Yeah, they sure did, because they knew their lied in income.
The best results, yeah.
Yes, and so now Matt and I do Orlok, which is our version of that freedom we knew then. Wow. And that's why these books are doing what they're doing. I am absolutely ecstatic this thing crossed. I mean, I haven't been following it the last day and a half or so because I've been really busy trying to keep up with what Matt wants. So,
wow!
No,
really saying it right there.
What a monster!
Yeah, I know this guy's a maniac.
Master, baby.
Hey,
you're both sipping bourbon and talking about how happy you are.
deadlines are the ultimate master of these things. So,
yes.
But for it to cross 200 on the third one is due in no small part to what Matt's original idea was. That is absolutely the truth. And that's one guy with one idea that now has allowed that to be seen and read and reacted to. You have to respect that.
Another big part of it is how Kelly and I came into approaching this crowdfunding scene. Which was we're gonna be absolute fucking pros with this, because we both have many colleagues that we have seen go down this path and get deep into a well-funded project, and then something happens and they can't get it done, and it doesn't ship on time, and a lot of ill will is generated, and we were just like, that ain't gonna happen with us.
No, and I think a lot of it too is that a lot of the people that we're talking about had always relied on the fact they were doing a major character for one of the big two. Matt and I have always been, Matt clearly has been very independent, and I've been very independent in what I do and never really did superheroes. So you don't give anyone a chance to turn you down by being stupid and being late. You right. Be on time, you show what you have, you give it your all. And that kind of having to be professional and be honest in what you do.
This is a neat segue to talk about the process. Alex, as you said, Kickstarter is running now through October because, of course, it's October. It's Dracula season.
God, that's
oh, yeah.
Right. So we had book one almost all the way done when we started the Kickstarter campaign for it. But in the succeeding volumes, the way it has worked is that when the campaign ends, I start writing the next book. And I get that script to Kelly around the turn of the year. And then Kelly starts drawing. And then by the time the next Kickstarter launches at the beginning of October, it's not completely done, but it's pretty close.
It's getting there.
And then you know, I'm working with – I'm basically the book designer too. So I'm working with Dark Horse and our production team and everything. And I get together the afterword, all the extra stuff you're going to see, the book layout and everything. Then it heads out to the printer in February usually. And then it gets printed through the summer. And then it comes to our fulfillment service. And it ends up in the hands of our backers in September. So right before the next volume launches. So it's a
machine.
Smooth. Yeah. It's smooth. Well, yeah. It really works nicely. Yep.
For me, I'm having to do basically pencil and ink a six issue miniseries, so that's 240 pages or something.
Dang.
But that's over the course of a year. And let me point out, Kel did 3 years on Batman.
Yeah.
You know.
Never missed.
That was 12 issues per year. That's
12. So when it comes out, you know, I'm doing, like I said, 240 pages in that year, plus all the futzing around you do with it. But that means you can't really miss. If you screw up in March, you're going to pay for it in August. So you have to stay on target the whole time.
Wow, my life is the opposite of that. Yeah. But I do want to ask you, Kelly. Speaking of not missing, what is going on behind you on your walls? What panels do you have up there? Sorry, this is the Pete LePage question.
Okay, that's a one page story from a Charlton horror comic.
Ooh, yes.
By Wayne Howard. Really good. It starts there, finishes there. I love how quick it is.
Oh, that's awesome.
The Marvel ad for Wrightson's Frankenstein from 1981 or whatever.
Very timely. Wow. Yes. Emperor's film getting ready to premiere.
You know, there's an old creepy cover from a book I read until the cover came off. there you see there.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
There's a film cell from Lord of the Rings who have a Nazgul, which I love.
Oh my god.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, so a lot of just that background is what I look at when I'm working.
You're flipped around.
Yeah, my drawing board's on the other side of this. So when I sit there and feel sorry for myself, I look at hard work and then I go, okay.
I look at hard work.
Okay, I have no reason to complain. When I look at Bryce and Frankenstein, I said he did that not knowing he'd get a cent.
I love that. Yeah. That's great. And Matt, what's behind you?
$400 a month for the studio in Manhattan at that point. But anyway.
Yeah. Matt, what do you have behind you? Anything? What inspires you?
I'm pointed at non-interesting shit behind me. This is just a cubby with my supplies. Yeah. I could point around and show you more stuff. So in my house, I don't have any of my, and I think Kelly's the same way. I don't have any of my own work on display.
Neither, I don't either. None.
Because it would just kill me. It was just like, all I would do is stare at it and think about the parts I don't like.
Yep. Yeah. That's my problem too. I would hate everything.
But right behind my drawing table, I have a kind of big thing with all, you know, all the various statues and toys and merch and all that shit lined up from Grendel over the many, many years, you know.
Of course.
Oh, man.
Let me ask you guys before we start to wrap up here. So you've got this third volume. Are you actually doing more? Are you going beyond?
Least four. From the very beginning, I had four in mind.
Okay.
In our very first phone conversation about it, I said to Kelly, this is going to be four. And because to backtrack just a touch, I think we might have talked about this last time. You know, Kelly and I had known each other for decades, and we had always wanted to work together, and we always wanted to work together on something big, something significant, something very satisfying to both of us. And he had kind of made a comment on one of my Facebook posts at one point about the same, you know, hey, we got to work together someday. And I called him, and I had been brewing in this Dracula idea for 10, 12 years on how to do it differently, what to do with this extremely well-trodden material. And I said, dude, are you serious, man? Because I think I got what is the perfect thing for us, but it's going to be a big commitment. Like, we're going to be on this for 5 years, maybe more, you know? And we started talking, and I said, all right, I have the idea for 4 graphic novels, and here's the very preliminary outline for them. And so, yes, I had 4 ideas, idea for 4 volumes from the beginning. We now have an idea for a cool follow-up that I won't quite reveal yet, and then maybe even more graphic novels. So,
wow.
But Matt also threw in a thing. He said he wanted it to be a throwback to, like, the late 70s heavy metal. He told me, if you want to draw something gory or a nude woman or anything, you do it. I'm just going to – you don't worry about this. So when I read it, I went, oh, man, this – it's exactly what you want. And since nobody is that nobody does books like they did in the late 70s anymore, it's going to seem fresh and new, and it is. And the first time I started drawing things that were pretty – off the charts, all Matt would do is go, yay. And I went, okay. And what's interesting is when you start getting feedback, and on the first one, I started getting feedback on, finally somebody drew impalements the way they really are.
Oh no! Right. Report that comment.
Matt made me, you know,
my impalements. I finally see myself in your work.
Right. It's like he would say, you know, he was doing such research. I went, well, then I'm going to have to do as best I can. So I looked up impalement. It was pretty awful.
Yeah. Right. I bet.
And it's one of those things where, you know, in the book, you get recipes. In Stoker's book, you get recipes for chicken paprikash. Well, Matt, you know, Matt's not doing that. He's doing impalement. So you got to how do they actually put the sharpened stake through a man or a woman. And I read that. I went, oh, that's just perfect. It's horrible, but it's perfect.
And in regards to the research, I get this new volume was, I'm not kidding, the most intensive thing I've ever written, because as I mentioned earlier, the book is told in the form of letters and journals. So every day, every action is dated, has a month and a day. So I had, as I was writing book 3, I had 3 different annotated versions open in front of me that I was flipping back and forth with seriously, reading all the damn footnotes. I had a facsimile edition of Stoker's original notes and outlines, which are all still intact and housed at a museum, a literary museum in Philadelphia called the Rickenbach Museum. Mm. And I had a calendar from the back of one of the annotated editions that was every event in the novel by the day, like a calendar that said, here's what happens this day, here's what happens this day, here's what happens this day. I had to make all that fit to make all the Dracula scholars happy. And yet I also had to make a story for the people that have never read the book and don't give a shit about reading the book. They just want to come read a cool comic about Dracula, you know? So it was a very, very intensive writing scene this time around.
So when you hear that, and see, I'm hearing that before anyone's hearing that. He's telling me this, and I'm like going, ah, Jesus, he's really kicking.
He's crazy.
He's, you know, I love the novel. I've read it several times, but he knew every freaking period and okay. So when he, for example, when he said the brides, and he was saying they're doing them original, and he was going to write about these women. And he kept saying, Dracula's girls got to be special because this is why you would choose them. And he told me all that. So for me, I then realized I can't look at anything, as I wasn't going to anyway. And then I went out and when I was reading them, discovered each one of these women I knew in my real life. I knew them.
Wow.
Right. I knew the first girl because she was nuts. And she wouldn't accept that she was nuts. And it was perfect because as I read it, she looked the way Matt described. She acted the way Matt described. Then the next one came along, and I was married to that one. So that one was easy.
A lot of easy research there.
Yes, that whole thing. I went, yeah, I know that one. And then the third one was like a sister to me. And I'm reading it, and I'm going, this is God's giving me a kiss right now, making it easy.
I would like to take credit for all this. It was just happy providence.
It was. Well, pure luck. And when it all happened, they were all there. So I had to, of course, let them see what Matt had written to, so they could say no if they wanted. Because I said, look, you're going to be raped and murdered, and then you're going to rape and murder yourself. So do you want to be in this? And all of them said yes. And I said,
hell yes. Sure.
And yeah. It was a hell yes. They have been so happy. Now that I've showed them a finished product, they are so proud. I go, now, do you want anyone to know? Because they're going to think ill of you now. But in a good way. And no, it all worked out. I mean, it's one of those things where I felt good about that situation because Matt had put so much work into those stories that I didn't want to just draw the same old thing that everyone's seen before.
Well, that's really interesting, that nexus point between Matt's research. He's doing extra research, so Kelly, you have to go extra personal with your drawing. Actually, like I have never thought of it that way before.
No, that's
really cool. It works, man.
I think you said it best, is I went more personal. I did not look at anything other than what Matt's script said, and then I followed that. And that is why, if there's a thing I like, it's a lot of other artist friends of mine are getting only sent, this looks so original. Where are you getting it? And I go, and now I can say personal. I kept saying, I'm not looking at anything. I said, I'm making it. I said, you have to respect. Look, Matt had this thing in his head for 10 years. And then he was telling me while he was writing it how much research he was doing. And I kept saying,
stressing you out.
Lord, this is like a master's degree he's going for. And I kept going, I can't just go and then do a knockoff of Christopher Lee or whatever. I can't just draw some Playboy girl. It's got to be real women. It's got to be real places. It's got to be a real guy.
Wow. Extra work, extra guilt, extra work. Extra personal.
Yeah. When you have that happen, what I think happens, at least for me, was your style completely takes over. You're not controlled or beholden to something that happened before. And I felt very much it was like the first Hammer film, Horror of Dracula. I think they did the same thing that Matt did. They said, how do we do this? Everyone knows the story. We'll make Harker a vampire hunter rather than just a realtor. And they started doing all the, when you watch it, you go, man,
they made Van Helsing an action hero too.
Right. Yes. And so they took a lot of brave chances in it. And I went, you know, not since Jimmy Sangster, who was the writer of that, until Matt, did you get a guy who was that brave to do this and not change it? It's actually even more brave. Follow it. Mm. And then, so when I'm doing the count and he's saying, look, we're not doing the novel. We're doing what Dracula was doing that we don't know what they were doing, but we're following the novel. I go, how do you do that? I get the script. He did it. And so at that point, you go, I'm very happy with how The Brights has done. I was ecstatic with the book, but I cannot wait for a year from now when people are reading the count, because they're going to see with this neat, And I know the trick, and I still can't see how Matt did it. It's brilliant.
Yeah. Wow. It shows.
I do want to mention a comment here. This is from Stray Bullet, our chef, to go back a couple of conversations. He says, I can do a recipe for an impaled chicken paprika.
I want that.
Right up its butt, baby.
I'm going to cook it and post it. I will do that.
He will make it happen.
He'll do it. He will 100% do it.
Have you ever made beer can chicken? You stuff a beer can up the chicken's butt.
I want a steak through a chicken, and I am going to. that will be part of the Jones family cuisine.
This will happen. That's a guarantee.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm hoping to see that. We'll see that in the fourth book. Either way, congratulations, Guy. Congratulations
on
the success. Thanks again for having us on, you guys.
It's an absolute pleasure.
Hopefully, talking a year for the fourth book.
You bet we will.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a good night.
Take you care. Did, Oh, man.
All right. There we go. Once again, the book is called Dracula Book 3. The Count. It's on Kickstarter now. Depending on when you're listening to this, there are 52 hours to go right now, but it's wrapping up Thursday, October 30th at 11:59 p.m. Eastern time. So get in your pledges now, because as you probably intuit, this is a great book.
It's so cool to hear them like talk about it with such excitement. And
they seem like two giddy little kids.
They're so just to see people so happy. You just don't ever see it. So shouts to them. Yeah, and the idea of like more research from the writer means more personal from the artist. I'm going to take that with me. That's really cool.
Yeah. Plus, you can see it in the work. I mean, it really comes through. Yeah.
Ever feel like your WordPress site is moving in slow motion? Switch to Kinsta's managed hosting for WordPress and watch it fly. Host your site on Google Cloud's fastest servers with worldwide data centers so your pages load instantly. Need help? WordPress experts respond in under 2 minutes and will migrate to your site for free. Try it yourself. First month free at Kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
There you go. Maybe awesome. We could also see it in our next work from our next guest. He's another returning guest to the show. He also has a Kickstarter for his book, Seasons. Ladies and gentlemen, Nandor Fox Schaefer. Nandor, welcome.
Hello. Hey, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. What's up? Hey, thanks so much.
Excited to see you. We did, as we were talking about before we got on, we bumped into each other at New York Comic Con, and that was fun. Before we even talk about the Kickstarter, what were you doing there? What was your goal when you were at New York Comic Con?
Yeah, I mean, there were so many things that I wanted to do and so many people I wanted to meet. It was my first time in the city and first time at the convention.
Wow.
So
wow.
You know, for me, it was a lot of firsts. And
try a piece of pizza?
Oh, yes. I think
it's a slice, I went bro. To like, it's a slice.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Alex has never done it, so he wants to hear about it.
Yeah.
The bagels are good as well.
I went to four different pizza places while I was there. You know, I think I was in town for about 6 days, 5 or 6 days. So I had a couple of days where I could explore, and you know, I like went to the top of the Empire State Building and you know, did some touristy stuff. I initially went to the convention because it's been a really great year for me professionally as a writer. I've gotten 2 publishing deals over the summer. And I wanted to one of the deals I got was with Gungnir Books, Steve Orlando is working as my editor for a graphic novel that I have going on. So I wanted to meet him and meet, you know, other publishers. And
he doesn't disappoint that guy.
Yeah, he's fun.
Yeah.
Steve takes you out.
Yeah, I loved, you know, getting to talk with him and just to meet in person. And I went to a lot of different panels and was mainly, you know, doing a lot of meeting up with other writers and networking and just trying to, see. I feel like this was the first year, you know, I've been making comics for a while, but this was the first year that I felt like I deserve to be there, if that makes sense. You know,
awesome. That must be so gratifying.
Right, exactly. You know, and after so long and trying to, you know, get your work out there, to be able to kind of be around other creators and to feel like comfortable in that space and not like an imposter syndrome, you know, like attack happening, like, you know, because we're all for me, it's like, It's weird to, especially with like Steve, because I've been such a big fan of his work, like to then work with him, like, you know, and be colleagues together on something. So it's weird. It's kind of one of those out of body experiences where you're like, whoa, like, is this really happening? Like, it's very surreal.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it meant a lot. I had an absolute blast. I mean, I got, you know, some comics signed, met a lot of great people. Had amazing food, I cannot wait to go back.
Awesome. Cool. Well, let's talk about your Kickstarter. The book is called Seasons, as I mentioned, and this is part of a 4-book cycle per the name.
Get it?
Yep. Correct me if I'm wrong. So basically, this Kickstarter is a reprint in soft cover to tee up the next books in the series. Is that
correct? Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So the concept also is you've got a character who has different powers for each season. So talk to us a little bit about that. Give us the pitch for the book, if you don't mind.
Of course. Yeah. So just for, some more context on this campaign. Seasons was the first book I ever put out in 2017, 2018. I was trying to, take a stab at comics and to build my career. And this was the first idea that I had where I wanted to put my work out there. And this was also my collaborator's first book as well, Anthony's. And so we came together and wanted to do this really ambitious, special project. We really wanted to make a statement for our first book. We planned out this 4-volume graphic novel series that is a supernatural series with some like grounded superhero elements to it about this young man whose abilities change with every passing season. And with each book, he takes on a different foe and he's overcoming different obstacles in his life to to fulfill his potential, to become the person he was always meant to be, essentially. It's as if all of these random events are aligning and the stars are aligning for him to force him on this path that he's kind of neglectful to even be on in some sense. He's like, why is this happening to me? How can I do the things that I can do? And he gets thrusted into this kind of world unseen, this environment that is very foreign to him, and he has to take on these different entities. So it's a character study that explores personal responsibility and trauma and depression, and trying to learn from your mistakes and become a better person throughout this entire year. So hopefully by it's all set in real time as well. So we start in the spring, and by the time we get to the end of the fourth volume, we'll get back to that, starting point again. And what I hope to be the satisfying conclusion of this book is for the reader to follow Fletcher on this journey and to see what he learns and what you may learn with him.
Cool. That's awesome. The first thing that strikes me about it is like in comics where like powers don't change. Like when a major character's power changes, it's like, okay, what's happening here? Yeah. They better change back real fast.
Anathema. Yeah.
Yes. And so like, I was like, oh, this, of course, this is like such a smart way to approach character. Like we get into comics because it's the power sets or the supernatural thing is the expression of a metaphor that we like, but the metaphor doesn't change for so many characters. So what was it like? How did you land on the idea of having this be the powers be the metaphor of change in the character?
Yeah, well, that was really the light bulb moment. That's kind of the idea. You know, when I was figuring out what kind of story I wanted to tell, and I'd never written a story before, so this was like fish out of water, like, what am I doing? How do I do this? How do I structure this? And I was looking for structure, I think, more like that was the fundamental thing I was looking for and how to structure a series. And I, grew up reading superhero comics all my life, and there are certain characters that I love, but I found it very interesting in how a lot of characters' powers, they never get built upon. Usually it always stays static, and like we know what Superman can do, we know what he can't do. So anytime a character does something that feels out of the ordinary, you're like, wait a second, like that's not that character.
Yeah.
The powers are so intrinsic to who that character is and how we identify them, and it's what makes a universe work too, which makes a lot of sense in terms of like we don't want any overlap. So with seasons, I thought it would just be so fascinating if we turned that on its head, and that was kind of the point in using that metaphor of change and how these abilities, it doesn't just mean that Fletcher can do these really cool things. It also means that these are kind of tools for him to use to accomplish this bigger more like metatextual goal that he's trying to achieve. So, and for me, I just thought, you know, I feel like I'd get kind of tired of the character doing the same thing. And I thought it would be so cool.
Same.
Yeah, it's great. you go to the next arc, and then it's like, oh, wait, he can't do what he used to, but he can do other things. And how would he do them? And also, how jarring would that be for a character to be like, wait a second, like, why is this different now? You know, and that metaphor of you know, almost like a late coming of age and discovering things yeah. about yourself that you never knew. And even, you know, getting older and the things you learn about yourself when you are in your 20s, 30s, 40s, and how different you feel like as a person. So
yeah, my powers are different. And there's only so many times I can see a character fire a gun and be like, I'm mad because my family died or whatever.
Come on, man. Let's not take personal shots at people while he's sharing this, you know.
Yeah. I also Frank have different powers now that I'm older. Is knees hurting a power?
Sure is.
Yeah, that's winter. That's a winter power.
Yeah, that's the winter. That's yeah. the winter. Yeah. Gets
Speaking of which, Derek Maynard has a question here in the comments. Are his powers consistent for each season? In other words, are his winter powers the same every year?
Oh, that's a great question. They would be the same. That was something that I found to be, you know, you start to kind of chase your own tail eventually of like, nah, wait a second, I'm establishing these rules. So how do I follow them? What are the rules now? But yeah, so with every season, Fletcher's abilities would be the same for that specific season. There may be
global warming may affect them.
Yeah, there you go. or how close you are to the equator, or you know, like where you are. There you go, yeah. But yeah, so yeah, if that answers the question.
Yeah, I think so. Given this is a property that was the first thing you created and now you're revisiting it after you have done a lot more, what was it like looking back on these original volumes? Were there things you tweaked and changed, or you're like, let it be, move on to the next thing?
Yeah, I got to say, that was probably one of the most difficult decisions that I had to make, was to look back on your old work and go, wait a second, do I even want to revisit this? And, you know, because I feel like I'm such a better writer now and I've learned so much. And the series still needs to be completed. And when I sold out of the hardcovers that I had for the first two books, there were these like collector limited editions that I published, and we were getting ready for volume three. I was like, you know, I want people to be able to catch up because I still have the story to finish. And I also feel like volumes three and four, with what I know now as a writer, will be better than ever, than they could ever be if I would have released them, you know, earlier, if I hadn't done Man-Child or Lifeline or The Fabled Offering, anything else that I've worked on. And so that's what really got me excited. And so I was like, I'm going to keep these the same. I don't want to change anything about them. And I even talked to Anthony about that too, because I mean, there's so many things that he could change as well. Like with his style, how it's evolved, how he's gotten to be a better artist, because each book is over 100 pages. So you can only imagine how better you would get after that much work was put into a series. Right. So
yeah, but you can't change because that's the metaphor. Like, you're evolving in the same way that the character is. It's
And that's kind of how I settled on it, was like the reader will see Fletcher's life evolve, and they'll also see us evolve with it and with the story. And that's, you know, kind of the beauty of crowdfunding and doing a book like this, is you have that direct to customer relationship, and that can be really special, and to, you know, not only have the creators grow with the book, but the series get better and better with each volume. So in preparation for this launch, I did a little newsletter series about creating seasons and going through all the steps of what it's like to create your first book, and kind of walking down memory lane and going through all of that. It was really interesting. Also, you know, it made me think about just how far I've come since that point and how much I've changed as a person. And it made seasons almost even more relevant than I would have thought.
That's awesome. It helps. It enhances the story. I feel like for fans, it's like, oh, look, you can see if then they're riding along with the character, but also you as a creator on the journey.
That's really cool. You know, sometimes I regret having Seasons be my first book because it was so ambitious. But other times I look back and I go, I'm really proud of that kid who was out of high school and who wanted to make the thing and, you know, decided to do it.
Well, especially because it's working. Like, you're succeeding.
Right.
It's especially good now.
It'd be different if I looked back and I was like, man, what an idiot.
You know? Like, I'm a dentist now, so it felt sort of weird.
All of that has, you know, just been a part of my story, I guess. And that's what makes Seasons really special. And, you know, I can't wait for this next volume. And something that's really cool about this Kickstarter in particular is that this is the first chance people get to have a sneak peek at Volume 3, because there is a exclusive 28-page ashcan that is like first chapter of the next volume. So if there are any readers who've read Volumes 1 and 2 and have been waiting, you know, for the next book, that's, you know, your first glimpse into that next
that
step.
Kickstarter button.
Fletcher. Yeah. So, but yeah, I couldn't be more proud. And I think, you know, I'm a completionist in everything I do. I cannot leave a story unfinished. And this campaign and re-releasing these titles has been, you know, the best way for me to like, okay, it's time to finish the story. And I feel like I'm finally ready to do that. And one last thing too, which was really serendipitous, I'd been thinking of launching this Kickstarter for a while. Just this year, the other publishing deal I was able to acquire was getting this book picked up by Sourcepoint Press. And so they're going to be publishing this in the direct market in 2026. So
cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Really.
Congratulations.
Congrats. Yeah.
That is so cool. You currently have 23 days to go on the Kickstarter. Is there a tier of the Kickstarter, if people are going to check it out, they should head towards, that you think is particularly cool?
Yeah, I would highly recommend, because I feel like it's very affordable and also reasonable, to check out the catch-up tier, which is the Volumes 1 and 2 and the Ashcan. And it's $40, and you get 228 pages of comics.
Whoa, so that's pretty good. That's a deal.
It's you know, two trade paperbacks and the Ashcan, and then you know, some extra goodies that we'll throw in there. But that's the one I would point people to. If people did want, you know, they're like, I don't know if I want to, you know, be that committed, get that invested. The PDF for the first volume, if you're a digital reader, is only $5. So,
That's
great.
It's, you know, very affordable, and hopefully it'll get you in the door.
Well, and we didn't talk too much about the art in the book, but like, I would say if you're at all curious about this great story, check out the Kickstarter just to see the art pages up there. We showed them here on the YouTube, but if you're just listening to this, fantastic art along with a great story.
Yeah. Anthony has this very detailed but kind of Eastern, you know, manga aesthetic to his work that is really unique. And the closest I can think of, like, you know, what it's like, it reminds me of, you know, Evan Cagle stuff that he's been putting out with, like, New Gods and Dawn Runner. Like, it, you know, there's some of that kinetic energy going on. But,
kinetic, emotional, really expressive eyes. Like, I really like
it. Right, yeah. But yeah, Anthony's killer, so I appreciate that.
And so are you, Nandor. Thank you so much for coming on again. Congrats on the book, and good luck with the rest of the Kickstarter.
Yeah. Hey, thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it. And I hope to be back and, you know, talk about Volumes 3 and 4.
Yeah. Please do.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Nandor. Have a great night.
Right, take peace. Care. Thanks.
All right. There we go. Once again, that book is called Seasons, Volume 1 and 2, Spring and Summer. Trade paperback are on Kickstarter now, so check that out. And folks, we're going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section, because you all make it up. It is your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments. Can be about absolutely anything. In the meantime, I think we already talked about it. What you guys are drinking? You're
drinking that straight Coppola blood, gang. Get after it. 2023. This is before he made Megalopolis, so he's still feeling good, and you can taste it in the wine.
It's a richer blood. That's right. You're saying, yeah.
Yeah, it's a richer
fresh,
blood.
Fresh, young Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah, the 2025 vintage gets a little thin and sad. So definitely.
Oh, no.
Pete?
Yeah, man. I got a carport, but I'm drinking garage beer. Come on.
Let's go to the
phones.
Yes,
see if we got any callers.
Yes, thanks, Pete. It came for the radio. Asked you guys were at New York Comic Con. Were you there Wednesday? Also, Justin, check your spam folder.
Oh, ooh. Wow! What an interesting request. Okay, let me do this.
You're gonna check and be like, "Ooh, lots of porn."
So much. Wow! Came from the radio. It came from the OnlyFans.
Yes. Justin and I were at New York Comic Con. I was not there Wednesday. I wanted to, but had some family stuff to take care of.
But you were there Thursday.
I was there Thursday. I think he's asking about Wednesday specifically because that was the retailer day at New York Comic Con. And I was really curious to go this year, and it just did not work out time-wise at all, which was a bit of a bummer because it's cool. It's like a chiller day with some presentations from Jim Lee and Marvel and Todd McFarlane and other folks just kind of like talking about the business and getting kind of wonky about it, which I think is kind of neat. So fingers crossed I can go next year. I would love to check it out.
Pete, we did get to say hi to Jim Lee briefly, right where we stand together, Alex, on Friday, I want to say, when he walked past us. It was like, what's up? And he's the king of New York as well. And came from the radio.
Did you say that?
I didn't have the minute to say that. He might have his security team escort me out if I say that. And yes, he came from the radio. I did find your email, and I will write you back.
Oh, hey, fun.
There you go. Great. Got to get that porn. All right. Stray Bullet says, what is the ultimate Halloween costume since you guys did dress up and everything?
Oh, man, Stray Bullet. I'm so sorry we let you down, you know. But it's Justin's fault. He was traveling, you know, so traveling is a good excuse.
I was traveling, so Pete can't dress up.
Yeah, it's a good excuse for things because he travels a lot. I don't know, man. As I get older, I want a costume that's comfortable to be in. But I would say favorite.
That's the oldest shit I've ever heard.
Because I'm in bed by 4 on Halloween.
My blanket is my costume.
Yeah, my blanket, anything snuggly.
Were dressed like Obi-Wan Kenobi when we started this podcast, and you took your little sweatshirt off.
I would like to, my favorite costume that I've done of all time is Ninja on Vacation.
Really nice.
Okay, go ahead. What was that?
It was head to toe, like a ninja garb, and then a Hawaiian shirt over it with the camera around my shoulders.
Oh, that's good.
That's really good. I went as Lowell from Wings when I was like 13.
You're a Wings guy, dude.
I'm a huge Wings fan. Thomas Hayden Church later to be Sandman. I guess probably the more recent ultimate costume was I went from the dad from Bluey, Bandit, but the costume didn't fit me, so it was like a little.
Wait, you love tight shirts, bro. What are you talking about, Den
Fisher? You can't go tight all the way down. It's a problem. My family went. I was Bandit. My older daughter was Bluey. Younger was Bingo. And of course, my wife was the mayor of Easttown.
Oh,
I remember that.
Mayor of Easttown.
Yeah. Not themed.
She broke from the theme. We had the chili costume. She went with mayor, a Carhartt, and a vape, and made me look especially weird.
Fun. It seems like you guys are doing great.
Yep.
Yeah.
Ultimate Halloween costume. I did like, I dressed as Kevin Keller from Riverdale one Halloween, and I gave myself a little scar and everything. That was pretty fun.
I thought your abs, just exposing your abs is my favorite costume.
Oh, please. Please don't.
What? No, what do you mean? This costume?
No, yeah.
This one?
No, this is so stupid. It's not you. That's
the
not
way,
Kevin.
No, this is me.
That's Archie.
You haven't seen him. You haven't seen him with his shirt off.
I saw him recently. What are you talking about?
I'll lift his shirt off. Here we go. I'm lifting it up.
There it is. I
know that's like right below where you can see in the camera, but it's exactly the same.
There are two amazing, especially amazing things about this picture. One, the smile on your face is like a little too wry for Pete's taste for sure. But the way the neck meets your head, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah. But I'll give a shout out to my daughter and her friends this Halloween. They are all going as different Batmans.
Oh, nice.
Which is pretty great. So, like, one of them is going to be Bruce Wayne in a suit. One of them is going to be straightforward, like, Michael Keaton Batman. My daughter is going to be Robert Pattinson from the first scene of the Batman with, like, the smeared
the makeup. And the That's awesome. That's really funny.
So, like, that's great.
So
that's
emo.
Great. And apparently great that was choice. A coincidence. Like, three of them were like, I'm going to be this Batman. And they're like, all right, we're all themed now.
So, oh, hilarious.
Yeah. Fun.
So there you go. Let's see. Very frequent question. I'm sorry this is so frequent, but Eddie C says, will there ever be a live show again? I miss those.
Oh, Eddie C.
Let's do it.
We talk about it all the time.
We did one in New Orleans. Where were you, Eddie C?
We did. No, we did do one What's in New up? Orleans.
This means an NYC for Eddie C. That's what we need to do. In the old stomping grounds. Let's go, guys.
Yeah. Or we could do it in like the woods where you live, Pete.
Yeah, come on, man. Yeah. Plenty of room.
Nice nighttime podcast.
Yep, lots of room. The best thing about a show.
Yes, we would love to do it. We do constantly talk about it. Whenever there's an opportunity, we will make it happen for sure.
We will. I feel like we will. It's got to be like our how many years reunion? Like an obscene number. Is it 20?
18? I think it's 18 this year, right? Or was that last year?
I feel like it's more.
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm surprised we're in the teens.
Oh,
still.
Maybe it's 19. It's 19 because I think we started in 2006.
Okay.
All right. Wow. I'll look it up. I always look up the New York Times article and then work from there.
There you go.
Spiceman Frank says, at a con, how much is too much for a signature? This was actually a big question going on in our Discord over the past week. Lots of discussion about signatures. I mean, one of the things that I would say about it as somebody who does not generally get signatures.
Yeah, but you charge for your signatures at the cons. I've seen you.
Yeah, so much. No, I don't charge for the signatures. I am okay with people charging a lot of money for signatures if they know that their stuff is just going to get flipped anyway. Like, why shouldn't the artists or writers be getting stuff off of that? I also think it's a limiter a little bit in terms of... You know, if you're Scott Snyder, you cannot sit there signing an entire long box all day. Instead, if you're going to charge for the signatures, it whittles it down to people who really want it and want it to happen. And it also makes the actual fans a little choosier about, like, this is the one that I really love that I want.
Nobody's showing up with a long box being like, yo, Scott, you got to sign all these.
People.
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, dude. That's the thing. It's like
That's too much to ask.
The price is a good limiter, but to me, the thing I would do is be like, I'll sign like five. Like signing like 20 books, like it's like this. They're not even special to you. So what's the point of all of this? Yeah. You're just selling
them. They do, though. I know, Pete, you're like shooting it down. Maybe not a long box most of the time. I'm sure somebody has. But people all the time pull up with short boxes. We saw it at New York Comic Con.
Literally saw Chris Condon. Like, Yeah.
Just pulling it out, putting it out there, getting them to sign it. And, like, some of these people are doing it just to, like, flip it, and that's it. I remember it's not exactly a short box. I've told the story before. This is not much of a story. But, like, last year at New York Comic Con at Nick Dragotta's booth right after Absolute Batman 1 came out, I passed by and somebody, I kid you not, had 25 copies of Absolute Batman number 1 that he was having Nick Dragotta sign. And I don't think Nick Dragotta signed for signatures at that point. I'm sure he does now. So I think what that does, like, it limits it. It brings it down.
Yeah.
Or it drives it up to, like, the real flippers, I guess.
Wow.
But how much... Okay, I mean, to actually answer the question, though, like, your dream signature on something, how much is the most you would spend?
I don't know. I'm just not that guy. The number in my head is like $25, but I know that's like embarrassingly low for what most people pay for a signature.
Oh, wow. I was, you know, my signature story is, you know, I got Peter Mayhew, rest in peace, Chewbacca to sign something once, and that was like $25 or $35, something like that. And I was like, oh, wow, I can't believe this is crazy. But, yeah, I don't know. I think something around there is reasonable.
Michael Tillman, $100 for Stan Lee. It was worth it, in my opinion. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it depends on what you want and what you want out of the experience, because a lot of people use those signature things to talk to the people as well and have a one-on-one. So that's part of it.
A buddy of mine, a dad at my school, big comic guy, saw him a bunch of times in New York Comic Con. He brings like, you know, 4 or 5 comics up to sign, and he always asks one question. One and only one question. And it really does generate so much by saying something, not just being like, please.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's smart. It came for the radio. Says, since Nandor's first New York Comic Con was this year, do you remember your takeaway from your first New York Comic Con?
Ooh, taking it back.
I remember the first thing is how shitty the food is. But I was just really
ribs. I feel like you liked ribs then.
Yeah, I'm always trying to get ribs no matter where I am. I just think that like I was really impressed. I was blown away by the interaction with artists at Artist Alley and the kind of conversations that you can have with people. And also just how happy I was by all the different kinds of nerds that were there. You know, there was just so many different pockets and kind of cool places for people to kind of gather and talk. And I was just kind of impressed by the people watching.
Yeah, I don't remember the first one specifically. I mean, we've talked about this a lot, but I feel like by the second or third one, we were doing stuff for Newsarama, the live streams up at the skyboxes, and that was really fun, being able to like just be up there, have obviously everybody coming to us to do interviews was cool, but also just have that home base where we're able to, like Pete's saying, look down on everything and be like, this is awesome. Everybody's having a great time. This is so cool. Yeah. And every single person who came into the skybox would look behind them through the glass and be like, whoa, this is awesome, because everybody loved the community. So
how about a great story from that I can't tell anymore, sadly. But the the what I would say is that what a difficult interview Jackson Public and Doc Hammer were.
Oh, yeah. How about your first time? Oh, sorry.
Alex and I interviewed them, I want to say, like 6 cons in a row, and they always were there to fuck with us and not answer any questions and just spit random things back.
Yeah, I remember it was the second time we talked to them. I was like, I'm not going through this again, and I prepped so hard. And the first question I asked them was about an episode that came out the previous week, and they're like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, they were.
I was like, what?
I feel like after like the first or second year, then we were like, okay, don't try. then we really cracked it.
Yeah. How about the first time you guys went to New York City? What was that like?
Oh, because you're looking forward to coming sometime.
You should try.
You remember as like, a little kid, I know, you know, Alex, you said like, you know, you were in Long Island and your dad would go in and get like comics. But like the first time you saw the city, was that like a cool moment?
I can't remember that. I've been.
He was a baby. I didn't come to New York City until I was like.
The city, actually.
I was born in the city.
I was born in Mount Sinai Hospital in Manhattan. So
that's where my kids were born.
It was great.
Cool.
First time in the city, we're like, let me see that skyline. I didn't come until I was a junior in college.
Yeah, I was in college the first time. And I was just like, I said to a friend, like, hey, meet me on the corner of like 34th and 8th. And it was just like a nightmare. It was before cell phones. And we were trying to find each other. It was nuts.
For me, it was getting higher than I've ever been, doing ice bong hits, and then going to see Pitch Black in the front row, the Vin Diesel movie. And being very upset. I tried to buy popcorn. 4 of us tried to buy popcorn, and we just failed. We couldn't do it. We didn't have any. We just went and watched the movie. I was like, this is the worst.
Oh, that's a classic New York experience, though. A lot of people count seeing Pitch Black as one of the first things they do when they come to New York.
Yeah. That's right. It's like the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah,
Empire State.
You can tell where people come from. Did you see Pitch Black when you came to New York City first, or did you go see Chronicles of Riddick? You know, like which one?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
nice, figure dude. Things out from there.
Nice. There are two genders.
Yep. Well,
Chronicles
I guess that's
of Riddick and Pitch Black.
Guess that's it for your audience questions. Woop, woop, woop. We are going to move on with our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. This is the time we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online. Because if you had $25, you'd want to go to a comic book shop. Am I right? I mean, yeah, come on.
Come on.
Come home.
So all we need is a volunteer, a first stand up, a hey, pick me, a hey, I'd love $25 to go to the comic book shop, you know, I mean.
And we'll sign the screen for free.
Oh, yeah. Man. We'll,
25.
Eddie C. God. Says me.
Eddie C. Eddie C. back says in me. It. All right. Eddie C. Today's trivia is about the comic Return to Sleepy Hollow and a small nod to the legend Kimberly Hebert Gregory. R.I.P. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one, Eddie C. Which Eisner Award-winning author writes Return to Sleepy Hollow? Is it A, Casey Gilley? B, whoa, is that a bush with a name tag on it? C, Renee M. Bush.
You ever see one of those? Bush with a name tag on it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
George W. Mm-hmm.
That would be fun. Get some name tags to say
Halloween
George W.
Costume. Halloween costume, guys.
Ultimate Halloween sickest. Costume.
Eddie, you are correct. Here we go. Question number two. Who is one of the main characters of Return to Sleepy Hollow? Is it A, Ichabod Crane? B, what do you mean you yearn for the Eiffel Tower? C, Paris Jones?
While we're waiting for this answer to come through, Alex and I did an interview with the artist of this book at New York Comic Con, which was really, it's their first book, I believe, to come out, and it was a super exciting interview.
I love the art on this book, so that's
very
cool to
good
hear.
Art, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my God, yeah.
A, is it A?
A is correct! Here we go, last one. Question number three, in Return to Sleepy Hollow, there is an evil that lurks in the blank of the town. Is it A, Split Ends, B, Roots, or C, Matthew Modine?
Is it not Butthole? Did you say Butthole?
I didn't say Butthole. No. Nope.
Was it B, Utthole?
No, there is no other options, but I appreciate you trying to.
We got to read the book before we interviewed.
Yeah, and a butthole is the sleepiest of hollows.
Yes. Oh, wow.
Time to wake up. Wake up that butthole. A? Wake up, hollow.
It is B. I was trying to keep people on their toes by switching it around a little bit.
I love that you shook it up, Pete.
And you know what I mean? It's a split ends
Eddie,
roots joke. You know what I mean?
Unfortunately, you have lost trivia.
Oh, no! No, Eddie.
No, it's fine. We're still going to give you a gift card.
It's always 2 out of 3.
Yeah, exactly.
Shoot us an email at comicbookclublive@gmail.com and we'll get it
Pete,
off to you.
You should ask one unreasonably hard question every week because people can still win.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good point.
What secret movie were you intimating there, Pete?
Of course, I'm talking about the 2019 award-winning movie, Miss Virginia.
Oh, of course.
I haven't heard of any of that stuff that you said.
And what's your? How many times have you seen Miss Virginia?
A couple. It's a really good movie. I highly recommend
Miss
it.
Miss Virginia. That's that Drops of Jupiter song or whatever, right? Train?
Why don't we talk about what's coming out tomorrow in comic book shops?
Oh,
Pete,
man.
What are you looking forward to?
Dude, what a stack we have to talk about. I am so excited to talk about so many amazing books. Oh, let me first start by saying Absolute Batman 2025 annual number one. I mean,
wow, you really said all of those words.
Beef Batman? We're talking fucking beef, DWJ, and your grill piece? Come on, man. Absolute is top shelf comics. You know what I'm saying? Come on. And then Return to Sleepy Hollow, obviously. Just fucking rocks, bro. On Deadpool number one, Tim Seeley is just killing this fucking game. You know what I mean? I mean, call him seamless because motherfucker delivers. You know what I'm saying? Come on. And
who is writing your material?
Runaways number five, Doombot, baby.
Are you doing Godzilla. This whole stack?
Godzilla
versus America, Kansas City.
You know, yeah, right, man, come on. There,
no, just the idea of Godzilla.
The sauce monsters, bro. Come on, dude. Kansas
Pete,
City.
When are
sauce
you
monsters.
Not? When are you not wearing that T-shirt? Is my real question.
Well, we've been doing a lot of Godzilla books, so I'm
are you wearing a
lot.
T-shirt or is that your skin?
Yeah, that's just a very loose skin. Flesh. You know, Ozempic is hitting so hard. I'm looking forward to Disney Villains Maleficent number one. We talked to Paulina Gonishow, for the writer of this, recently, and it was really cool to get to read that ahead of time, and it's coming out tomorrow. I mean, I got to also shout out the team on the Absolute Batman Annual that Pete mentioned, Danny Warren Johnson, James Heron, Meredith McLaren. Really exciting that they're just doing that. I'm so excited to see what that means for the book. Because I was just thinking about Daniel Warren Johnson is like sort of a cousin of artistically of Nick Dakota. Yeah. So like I'm curious where the bends and the shapes are there. So that's cool. And I got to say, we've been, you know, a little mixed on our Age of Revelation events here.
Yeah,
but Cloak or Dagger number one, I am very interested by. I like the idea of Cloak or Dagger. I don't know what it means, but that's interesting. It's just a preposition.
Stuff I'm looking forward to, Superman Red and Blue 2025 special number one. That
Samnee cover.
Great Samnee cover. We got Mirka Andolfo on art, Michael Walsh, Caitlin Yarsky, Cian Tormi. Just a murderer's row of artists, if nothing else. So that's pretty exciting.
Somebody convict them. They've killed too many.
Super tight nanners.
Also very curious to check out Crownsville number one from Rodney Barnes. I believe we talked to him about it like a couple of months back or a year back when he was on the show. But this is definitely something that like he's been leading up to for a while. It's not exactly true crime, but it's sort of adjacent to that. It's supernatural.
Dude, it's...
Well, we haven't read it yet, Pete, so we don't know what it is, right, Pete?
Yeah.
That's right, man. And I wasn't going to say anything. I wasn't going to say anything to ruin that. So,
That's good.
Yeah.
Thanks, Pete.
To ruin that.
Yeah, no problem.
Anyway, I always am interested in what he's doing, particularly when it comes to the space. So curious to check that one out. And also give a shout out to Supernatural number one. We talked to Greg Pak, for a podcast, but person to person about.
We did just literally talk to him about it.
And he was pretty psyched about it. So I'm excited to see what he does with the property. All of those books and many more are going to be at our Stack podcast that comes out Wednesday, 9 a.m. in the Stack feed of the Comic Book Club feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Matt Wagner and Kelly Jones for coming on to talk about Dracula, Book 3, The Count on Kickstarter now. And Nandor Fox Schaefer for talking about Seasons, which is also on Kickstarter until November 20th. Next week on the show, big one for you guys. Frank Barbier and Morgan Beam are going to be here to talk about the author Immortal, which we like quite a bit. And Paul Pope is going to be on.
Yes, my guy.
That's your guy,
dude. About
the
long-awaited return of THD.
Oh, my God. Are you going to be able to handle it, Justin? Are you
I'm excited. I'm very curious if he's going to remember me, but I did. I will be home next week, and I will be having
Will you have your aunt? Yes, dude.
Comic Book Club News, our daily news show, Monday through Friday, every day of the week. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this show and all the shows we do. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Good night, everybody.
Take care of yourself. Spaceman Frank, what's up, bro?